I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there, beholden to no party, no politicians. I'm going to show you why any of your allegiance to one party or the other is a swing and a miss. I've got a great clip today. I spoke a couple of days ago about the fact that they were bringing the heads of the big banks for their annual, and they referred to it in the story that I covered, I believe, grilling by Congress. And this is, they'll do this. They'll bring up the heads of J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, where they a lot of politicians, particularly on the left, try to get out some sound bites. But the guys, the heads of these banks, they understand that they got to sit through this. They got to do the dog and pony show. But they know they've contributed to Maxine Waters' campaign. And I believe Maxine Waters is the head of the banking committee, which is terrifying enough. But I'm going to show you it's really quite illustrating just the absolute corruption of our government and our financial system. It's a beautiful, beautiful clip. It's not very long. It's great to see the video of it, too, so you can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com, and I will send you the clip. So we'll get to that in just a second. And then this is Friday, so we will pivot at 10 o'clock, go into False Flag Friday. We'll take a look at what is shaping up to be the closest we have been to World War III since World War II. They want these wars, and always remember, when economies collapse, they take you to war. This is a great cover-up for all the looting they've done. I was talking to a left-wing person yesterday, and we both agreed that we believe a lot of the agitation here, the separation of people, is because they know the financial system is really prison-pounding a lot of people and probably going to get a lot worse. And so what they've really got to do is they've got to get us fighting each other, because if we ever stopped and realized who was responsible for the mess we're in, we might come after them. I mean, they are going to put this on steroids, trust me. And partisans on both sides are going to do their best to stoke the fires of people fighting amongst each other, because the elites know if we ever caught a clue, if we ever calmed down a little bit with each other and really hashed through the facts, we would come for them. And that's the last thing they want. So they'll continue to stoke these divisions. At this show, I try to point that out. So, and then we'll finish up this show, as we always do, with chronicling the world's descent into madness with This Week on the Crazy Train. Quotes of the day today. Don Vinn tweeted this out. If, quote, everyone is tired of wearing masks, unquote, means we don't have to wear masks, the government should also know that, quote, everyone is tired of paying taxes, unquote. That's right. If we get tired of wearing masks, nobody's going to wear them anymore. I think we should take the same approach to taxes and just say this is also as futile as the masks. We're sick of doing that. This was funny. I ran across this clip. Stacey Abrams, she is the election denier in Georgia. She believes there was some hanky-panky, that she did not win the governorship in Georgia back in 2016. This round is making the clips of pro-life people, where she says there is no fetal heartbeat at 6 weeks. It's bad audio, but I think you'll get it.
There is no such thing as a heartbeat at 6 weeks. It is a manufactured sound designed to convince people that men have the right to take control of a woman's body away from her.
So there you go. That's Stacey Abrams saying there's no heartbeat at 6 minutes. A manufactured sound. One of the main reasons I played that today, As absurd as it is, I don't give Stacey Abrams any airtime here. I don't know if I've ever said her name on this show before, but what I loved about it was somebody's response to it. Somebody named Ashley St. Clair tweeted out, fact, an unborn baby has a healthier heart rate than Stacey Abrams after a buffet. I love that one. Here's a great quote of the day that goes really to the theme of this show. And people might take exception to my style. I can be sarcastic. I can be lectury. I can be obstinate. I can be maybe considered condescending at sometimes. I don't know. I'm so dismayed with people still participating in the political theater, not catching a clue, that my style may sometimes not be effective and potentially annoying. But Daniel Dennett said, quote, there's simply no polite way to tell people they've dedicated their lives to an illusion. There's simply no polite way to tell people they've dedicated their lives to an illusion. Now, I'm going to go ahead and play this clip now. My show notes, I got to be telling you, they're a little disjointed. I try to get a good flow to the show, but sometimes my show notes, I don't curate them properly. But so I'm going to go ahead and play this when I talk about dedicating your lives to an illusion. And that illusion is believing in one political party or the other. Now, the Democratic Party has gone completely wholesale insane, must be stopped. I'm praying for a red wave, but do not stop for a second and believe that 2022 red wave or a 2024 election that takes Biden out of the White House and replaces him with any Republican is going to somehow magically restore the union. It's simply not going to happen. And this is a great illustration of it. So this is the clip. The masters of the financial universe, the CEOs of all the big banks, were drawn into a congressional testimony where they were going to get a grilling by our Congress. These are the same banks. Many of these people would not have a job, at least not the job they have right now. Their banks would not exist had the taxpayer not stepped up and bailed them out after they engaged in risky financial behavior. In some cases, these companies were actually making fun of their clients and selling their clients products they knew were destined to lose a ton of value, but they needed to get them off their books, so they were abusing their own customers. But the taxpayer bailed them out, and so they retained their positions. Their banks are still standing, and so they go to Congress, and Congress tries to grandstand a little bit, particularly the left tries to grandstand and act like they are anti-Wall Street, when it's so funny that the woke movement is really a Wall Street movement. For Gay Pride Month or Pride Day or whatever it is, it's the Goldman Sachs that changed their Twitter icons, changed their Facebook banners to the rainbow flag. Same with Black History Month or any of these things. It's actually the woke corporations that are, what I believe is that in light of the anger with the biggest corporations and banks that were bailed out in 2008, the left was really quite put out with seeing these massively wealthy oligarchs be bailed out at taxpayer expense, as were many people on the right were upset about it too. Manifested itself in the Tea Party on one side and Occupy Wall Street on the other. Suddenly the corporation said, uh-oh, we got to do a little bit of image rehab. So the corporations decided to try to tell the people on the left who were mad at them, we're on your side. And so they went all woke. But this is when these masters of the universe, the financial kingpins, went to Congress yesterday. I want you to hear this exchange, and unfortunately, sorry for you Republicans out there, this is a Republican asking this question. I want you to hear this exchange.
The gentleman from Indiana, Mr. Hollingsworth, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Well, good afternoon. I'm excited to be here with each of you. Before I get started on my questions, Mr.
This is also the House Financial Services Committee, the watchdog. You got it? These are the people tasked with making sure that the American people are served and there's no abuses by the big banks. They're an oversight group, right? Just keep that in mind as you hear this unfold. This is PNC Bank, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Bank of America. I'm not sure if Goldman Sachs is there. Lloyd Blankfeld, I remember him. he was easy to spot. But they've got a new CEO, I believe, at Goldman. So I'm sure Goldman's probably at this table, but I can't tell if it's him or not. But anyway, again, this is the Oversight Committee of these financial institutions.
Good afternoon. I'm excited to be here with each of you. I get started on my questions, Mr. Moynihan, I wanted to let you know, Saruthi, raise your hand, Saruthi. She has been my team member for a couple of years now.
Now, this is Representative Trey Hollingsworth. He is a Republican from Indiana in their 9th district. Representative Trey Hollingsworth, a Republican from 9th district, Indiana.
She has been my team member for a couple of years now, but on Monday she becomes a Bank of America team member, about which she is very, very excited. So I hope you'll take good care of her and know and recognize the talent that she has shown already in our office. I'm sure she'll do the same at Bank of America.
Yeah, really sad. Boy, he is really loaded for bear against these institutions, isn't he? Yeah, one of his gals from his office is going from her Washington, D.C. office, where she's involved with the Congress, then she's going straight over to Bank of America. Now, if that isn't bad enough, listen to the rest of this.
We will do that, and her father already works for us, so he'll take care of it.
You should have called us.
Her father already works for Bank of America, and they laugh and laugh and laugh. This is your government. I'm going to play this one more time, and I'm going to let the rest of the clip play out.
Monday, she becomes a Bank of America team member, about which she is very, very excited. Woo-hoo! So I hope you'll take good care of her and know and recognize the talent that she has shown already in our office. I'm sure she'll do the same at Bank of America.
We will do that, and her father already works for us, so he'll take care of it.
You should have called us.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to chat about some of these issues today. What I'm really interested in is the state of the economy.
Yeah.
How are you?
The state of the economy, which is led by these big financial institutions, the Federal Reserve that feeds them. And this is just the revolving door. It's a big joke on Capitol Hill, the revolving door between Congress, our government, and the biggest banks there. These are supposedly the regulators. The regulators are sending their people, this girl and her father, both will end up at Bank of America. She's going to Bank of America. Her credentials are that she's got the ear of this Trey Hollingsworth character who was on the House Banking Committee. That's exactly what her bona fides are. And I would imagine her father potentially got hired at Bank of America, too, because his daughter worked on the staff of a member of the House Banking Committee in oversight. That's your government right there. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know she was with the Russians too?
Several times I've referred to a study that was done that showed that when people are 100% against something happening in Congress, it still has a 30% chance of passing, even if everybody is against it. And if 100% of people are for something happening in Congress, it's got about a 30% chance of happening, which has been a great study that basically they're saying the public has absolutely no input really on what goes on in Washington, D.C., because they're not there to serve you. They're there to serve special interests. The needle does not move. It doesn't really matter if the American people are hell-bent on something happening or not happening. The decision is not – it really doesn't involve you. Now, they may couch it. They may call something the Inflation Reduction Act to try to trick you, but the legislation itself is done for special interest. It's not done for you, and obviously this latest bill I'm referring to has nothing to do with inflation. My whole job is to – well – it's not a job that was given to me. It's a job that I have assumed, which is to explain to you how your government is not serving. I don't care if you're black or white, Republican or Democrat. I don't care. Neither one of these parties, they're not there to serve you. They are there to serve special interests. I'm going to play this clip one more time. I think this is so important because this is something that just happened a day or so ago. The laughing about the revolving door between Congress and the big banks. This is the same with big agricultural companies, any of the big corporate interests. These people come and go through government. And then it's followed by the person who put this together, followed it up with a scene from The Big Short, which is a great movie. It's very entertaining, I think, and it did a great job of really trying to explain to people exactly what took place in the housing crisis, in the great financial crisis of 2008-2009. If you've not seen that movie, put it on your must-watch list. I think it does a great job of explaining exactly what took place. But so I'm going to let this clip of Congress grilling. Remember, they're being grilled by Congress, their feet really being held to the fire in Congress as this Republican congressman from Indiana explains, you know, the revolving door. He's not trying to explain it. He just gives an illustration of it. And then this clip from the Big Short.
The gentleman from Indiana, Mr. Hollingsworth, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Well, good afternoon. I'm excited to be here with each of you. Before I get started on my questions, Mr. Moynihan, I wanted to let you know, Saruthi, raise your hand, Saruthi. She has been my team member for a couple of years now, but on Monday, she becomes a Bank of America team member, about which she is very, very excited. So I hope you'll take good care of her and know and recognize the talent that she has shown already in our office. I'm sure she'll do the same at Bank of America.
We will do that, and her father already works for us, so he'll take care of it.
You should have called us.
that other bank. I wish you had called us. We sure could use some favors from your congressional office. We would have given her a job, too, and any of those bankers would have given her a job.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to chat about some of these issues today. What I'm really interested in is the state of the economy.
How are you floating your resume to big banks? I mean, you're supposed to be the ones, you know, policing the big banks.
Grow up, Jamie.
There must be some kind of law against working for a financial institution right after you've been working in financial regulation, right?
No. No. Hey! Dougie!
Hey! Come over here! What are you doing at Caesar's?
He's a Goldman. Yeah.
Your father already works for...
So, you know, this is in the, you know, the SEC, that watchdog. You can go find stories. I've done them on this show before between, you know, what happens with SEC. They go and investigate the banks. They're the watchdog. They go investigate the banks. These guys making, they're living in New York City, sweating on the subway every morning, making $72,000, which is barely enough to keep your head above water in New York. They're supposedly investigating the banks, and so they, when they do the investigation of the bank, they strangely find nothing wrong with what the banks have done, and they're offered $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 jobs with those banks. It's legalized bribery. This is the Washington revolving door and why I do not play partisan politics here. I wanted to get into this. Thomas Massey said, bless your heart if you think you live in a democracy or even a republic, when in fact, the unelected Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System can intentionally destroy the value of your house and wreck your job prospects with one pronouncement based on secret math. And that's just another institution that does not work for you or me. The Federal Reserve does not work for you or me. It works for the banking system, actually owned by the banking system. But we're not really quite clear on exactly which banks own and how much they own. That's held pretty close to the vest. I was looking to try to get some quotes today. You know, I've been looking at what the Libertarian Party has been tweeting out because I think they're on fire. They are true freedom fighters when the mealy-mouthed Republicans talked yesterday about the fact that Roger Wicker and Cindy Hyde-Smith voted to take away a certain kind of refrigerant because they've bought into some of the Green New Deal. I was looking at the Libertarian Party's Twitter account today, and I noticed they had retweeted the GOP, and I was like, huh, maybe the GOP said something interesting. But it wasn't what the GOP said. It was the Libertarians' response to it. The GOP, in their corralling you into the two-party system, tweeted out, new, food inflation sends the American diner index soaring to 13%. This is the GOP saying families are facing rising prices because of Joe Biden and the Democrats' reckless spending. And the reason that the Libertarian Party sent this out was because they pointed out the fact that Republican presidents actually spend more than their Democratic predecessors every single time. So this was the point of Libertarians pointing this out. The GOP is so disingenuous on trying to convince you that the spending is only on one side and inflation is only caused by really one man and one party when it's not true. I've told you repeatedly that inflation is a policy. If you're suffering from inflation right now, if you think it's an act of God or a natural disaster or something, no, it's not a mistake. It's on purpose. Now, I've told you this many times before, but Bloomberg has reiterated this. I ran across this headline this morning. Check this out. U.S. is inflating its debt away after unprecedented spending binge. When measured against the economy, America's debt is set to post the biggest drop in the last in at least two decades. Now, of course, they don't mean that in actual dollars the debt's going down. Of course, it's still going up. But it says, for all the attention that soaring inflation has gotten this year, one of the most surprising direct offshoots has gone largely unnoticed. U.S. government debt is shrinking rapidly. Not in dollars and cents terms, no. That's growing day by day, minute by minute. But it's dropping in the way that really matters when measured against the inflated size of the economy. And Bloomberg goes on to say what it means. The good news. This is a big break for the government and taxpayers. It makes the debt more manageable and easier to pay back. And then Bloomberg says what it means, the bad news. It's lousy for bondholders. The money they'll be repaid by the government will be worth a lot less than the money they put up. What they're explaining to you is that with this inflation, the economy grows in nominal terms. You know, you got a raise because you have to, or new employees are getting higher wages because employers have got to cover the increased cost of living to attract workers. When you make more money, what do? You send in more taxes. They tax you more. When products cost more, I did this math the other day. I don't have it in front of me, but if something cost $100 a couple of years ago and they collected tax on that $100, now that product costs $120, they collect more taxes on that $120. Plus, that product that cost $100 a couple of years ago now costs $120. That's good for the GDP because they don't subtract out actual inflation. The government loves inflation. They want to be able to pay back the debt with cheaper dollars. Of course, the problem with that is it assumes that they would actually take some of the new inflated dollars and actually retire some of the debt. They're not. They're still stacking it up. But I just wanted to make sure that everyone saw this headline where you understand that the government, inflation is a policy. They're telling you it's a mistake. They're telling you they're trying to tackle it. They love this inflation. It's a little too high. It's a little too high because it makes the little people whine. And I will say that people in power don't like it when you whine or when you protest. It's annoying to them. It's like a mosquito flying around their ear. It's like, oh, God, they're just whining about 8.3% inflation. We know that's actually 16% inflation. It's always double whatever they tell us. But they don't like it when you whine, so they act like they're doing something about it. And then, you know, maybe they'll try to bring it down a little bit. But the government ultimately wants inflation because it makes their spending easier. It makes your life harder. It makes their life easier. That's why they like inflation. I'll be right back. Well, it would have been cool. And you would ever know. Only dashboard and melted, but we still have the radio. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. This show is a podcast as well. If you want to try to catch it later or share it with anybody, if there's anything that's of any interest you think someone might want to hear, you can check out The Mike Madison Show on Podbean. Or it's also unavailable on Apple Podcast and some other hosting sites. I don't put it anywhere else. I put it out into the world, and it's found its way to many different podcast places. So just search for The Mike Madison Show. I've got my – I love my logo for that thing. It's a guy jumping with a megaphone, just shouting. So anyway, you can check it out. It looks like I'm going to have some competition, though, out there. It's really always kind of depressing to see the competition that I run into. There's something like 1.2 million different podcasts that's completely saturated. The internet's so wonderful. It's YouTube. Never before have people had an opportunity to reach so many people, but that also brings with it such a crowded space. It's hard to stand out. But we've got a new entrant that I'm going to have to compete with. CIA launches a podcast hoping to demystify the agency and boost recruitment. Oh, This story on Archimax says there is no shortage of podcasts out there exploring the mechanics of espionage, celebrating fictionalized spies, and detailing real-world exploits of the country's premier intelligence agency, but only one as of today is officially unclassified. The CIA launched, quote, the Langley Files, unquote, podcast on Thursday, attempting to step out from its own shadows to share stories with from the agency's 75-year history and provide a little insight into what it takes to work there. And the goal of the podcast, according to a CIA spokesperson, and we know that the CIA will never mislead you. Oh, I should have queued up the Mike Pompeo clip where he says, I worked at the CIA. We were taught to lie, cheat, and steal. The goal of this podcast, according to CIA spokesman, is to provide a bit more transparency into an agency premised on secrecy. The Langley Files is a major milestone for the CIA as the agency marks its 75th anniversary. It's the latest. This is Susan Miller, the press secretary for the CIA. It's the latest in CIA's ongoing efforts to be as open as possible with the public, sharing what we can do about our mission, people, and history. So this will be quite the propaganda podcast. I may have to listen to it at some point. The CIA being known for well over, Kennedy told you, Eisenhower warned you. And I had a quote, as a matter of fact, now that I'm thinking about it, I ran across a quote of somebody who was talking about the CIA. It was Woodrow Wilson, was he the guy that set up the CIA? He was already concerned about it after he had started it. Said, it appears this thing is kind of going rogue. The CIA is not your friend, but they're going to reach out to you in the podcast world. Good Lord, I'm going to be outranked by a CIA podcast. There are very few things more depressing to me than that. As we see the economy start to unravel, I had a clip. It was a little bit too long. Someone talking about the used car market and what's happening in it right now. There's some worrying signs there. Something's going to break soon in this economy. Rates now, I've reported on these pretty regularly. Markets are taking a bit of a haircut today. The Dow is now back down below 30,000. And I've told you that one of the things to look at is the rate on the 10-year bond. And when it was a couple of weeks ago, I told you, if it goes north of 3%, look out below, the stock market's going to have some trouble. It is now at 3.7%. So the yield on the 10-year bond has gone up 20% in 2 weeks. That is not normal. That is not normal, and there's going to be a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money in the bond market. The largest, the debt markets dwarf the stock market, with people losing a lot of money in the bond markets because they're holding bonds that have significantly lower yields. And who's going to buy a bond that's yielding 1% when you can go out in the market now and get one that's got 3.7%? So people are taking a prison pounding in the bond market right now on bonds yielding lower rates. They're losing a lot of money. This is going to cause something to break at some point. So with all of these things starting to happen, it seems like Emmanuel Macron out of France is the spokesperson to tell us kind of, there's a saying that say the elites are always going to tell you what's going to happen. Now, this is a bit in the conspiracy theorist camp. Some people say they have to. I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff out there in the conspiracy world, too. But Emmanuel Macron, I reported on it a couple of weeks ago that Emmanuel Macron had come out and said the era of, what was it? Abundance. The era of abundance is over. He's just coming out and saying it. Just get used to it. And I guess, I don't know if this is refreshing. Emmanuel Macron is a horrible globalist. I believe he was a Rothschild's banker or his wife. What, didn't he marry an older woman that was his teacher or something? There's some Rothschild connection to Emmanuel Macron. But it seems like maybe they've tasked him, hey, every now and then, tell everybody what's coming. We owe him at least that. French President Emmanuel Macron is warning about a, quote, crisis of democracies, unquote, including in the United States, following a year of pressure and destabilization efforts. In an exclusive U.S. interview with CNN's Jake Tapper, asked by Tapper if he's worried about American democracy, Macron replied, I worry about all of us. Yeah, I would imagine the French have got a history. Macron should be worried about the guillotines. The French Revolution, pretty pretty well known to have held their elites to account. He went on to say, quote, I hate lecturing people and saying I'm worried for you, but I do believe that what is at stake is what we built in the 18th century. The French leader warned of global crises of Western, quote, liberal democracies when asked by Tapper about the trend in nationalism, populism, and racism, of course. And so what they're worried about, things are going to become unstable. They're going to blame the white supremacists. They're going to blame nationalists. What it actually is the elites like Emmanuel Macron, facilitated by these central banks, bringing everybody financially to their knees. There is going to be a crisis in these democracies. I sure wish, and I do my best to try to point everybody in the right direction. I hope you understand what's happening to you as it happens. And if you want to hold somebody to account, it's not your neighbor who voted for Trump. It's not your cousin who voted for Biden. The people who need to be held account are the Emmanuel Macrons of the world, the Joe Bidens and the rest of them, and the Republican congressman who was laughing about his staffer and her dad going to work at Bank of America. I'll be right back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now, some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
I'm excited. After the show today, I'm going to record an interview that will be played on the show soon with Mike Stonington, Mike and Katie Stonington from Stonington Farm down in Perkiston, Mississippi. I've never even met Mike. He is the rancher that has this grass-fed operation that I talk about a lot here that is currently feeding me about 75% of everything that I eat because I am endeavoring into the carnivore diet to try it out. He's going to come in. They're on their way through town, and we hadn't had a chance to get together and sit down and talk, but we're going to talk about the better nutritional profile of grass-fed, grass-finished. There seems to be a war in the meat industry where they tell you that grain-fed, at the very end, grain-finished is the better cut of meat. I've got actual information from a study that shows that if you want good quality meat, you get grass-fed, grass-finished. And I want to remind everybody, you'll hear this interview with the rancher. We're also going to talk a little bit about the business, too. You know, these small ranchers have been in big trouble because, again, Washington, D.C. is not, they're not about you. They're not about small farmers. They're about big ag companies. We've seen a real consolidation in meat processing, and it has been difficult at times for local cattlemen to even have their meat processed to be able to sell direct to consumers. The big ag companies have come in and gobbled everything up. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the state of the business, but we'll talk about Stonington Farm. If you are interested in getting good quality meat and you can get it cheaper than you can get it at the grocery store, I am here to testify to that because I've just bought several hundred dollars worth of meat from them. Check out StoningtonFarm.com. That's StoningtonFarm.com. These are Mississippi-born, bred, raised, and processed cattle. You are getting fresh meat straight from a local Mississippi farm. No hormones, no antibiotics, fed the way cows are supposed to be fed. If you buy in bulk, you can get it shipped up to Jackson for free. And we're looking at trying to figure out a way that I might be able to help them make some monthly or semi-monthly deliveries up to Jackson of smaller orders. But for right now, anyway, just check out StoningtonFarm.com. And check them out. We need to support local farmers. A lot of people are pointing out the fact we're having these problems with our food supply. There are food processing plants going up in flames. There are all kinds of supply disruptions to foodstuffs. We need to support and help grow so they can service more people, our local farmers that are bringing products like this. And in the case of Stonington Farm, they're bringing something incredibly healthy. Not only great tasting, I'm telling you right now, I have had now ribeyes, ground beef, chuck eye steak, and I've got a brisket that I'm just waiting for this weekend to cook up as well. So they've got fantastic tasting food too. But we need to help these local farmers grow and be able to serve the needs of Mississippians. They sell a lot down on the coast as well, and they're trying to get into the Jackson market, and I am trying to help them because if I can help them, if I can help a small local farmer get healthier meat into this market, that's like my mission. It hits me everywhere that I live. Small, local, Mississippi, and healthy. They've got it all. So check it out, stoningtonfarm.com, stoningtonfarm.com, and then watch out for the interview that I will record with Mike Stonington next after the show is over today. Keith emailed me during the break. We're talking about the CIA podcast. He said, in all fairness, the CIA probably has more podcasts than we'd like to believe. And that involves, there really is no telling how many people that are out there in podcast world. Many of them, probably the top podcasters, the NPRs, the rest of them that are probably on the take from the CIA right now. The CIA gets its message out in this Operation Mockingbird that they run across all media. And Keith's exactly right. I'm sure they have already infested the podcasting world. But now they've gone official. Tales from Langley or whatever this thing is called. They'll be going straight to the people with their propaganda rather than just cutouts. I wanted to finish on one little thing now before we get into False Flag Friday and this week on the Crazy Train. I saw a Market Watch question. I'm amused. This is almost like something I do to give me a smile every morning is these questions that people, financial questions people ask to Market Watch website. Because they're almost always these interpersonal things about how one relative or another is screwing them out of their inheritance. What do I owe him? Aren't I entitled to this money? Oh, money. But this somebody questioned, said, how much should I tip my housekeeper? My husband said we should tip the bare minimum. I say give her 30%. Who's right? Now, I got to say, with a housekeeper, 30% is generous. Certainly not off the board. I'm all for generosity here and a tip for a housekeeper that does well. A good housekeeper is not easy to find. I'll tell you that right now. And they're in demand. I used to be in the janitorial business, and we did some housekeeping out of request for it. And people would knock down the door for a good housekeeper. I'll also say this to you. If you're looking to start a good business, if you are a good housekeeper, you can make an easy $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year doing what other people don't want to do, because you can charge pretty good rates for people that are actually good, because there's a lot of bad housekeepers out there, and they're not cheap. So to be a good housekeeper is worth it. So anyway, but this brought it up to me, tipping. I've touched on this probably once every year or two. As somebody who spent a lot of time in the restaurant business, my mom always told me, you need to do time in the restaurant business so you understand the service industry. I think that is still great advice up to and including today. Both of my children have spent time in food services, so they understand the work and the stress that is involved, so that when they go out to enjoy a meal or go out for a drink or do anything that a service is required, they understand that tipping is not charity. It is rewarding people for a good service, and it's your ability to kind of run a gauge of how well they're doing. This is very free market capitalism. Service providers are incentivized through the tipping process to provide you the best possible service. It's a motivation for them, and you should use tipping accordingly. But, you know, if you get good full service, like a waiter or a bartender, something like that, people that come to your table, people that are interacting with you personally like that, a tip is 20%. It used to be 15%. I'll admit, yeah, that's gone up from 15 to 18 to around 20% now, but that's about normal. If you get good service, you should tip 20%. If you're getting just general, maybe not table service in a restaurant or something, you know, 10% is a pretty good tip. If you're not getting table service, a lot of people are getting paid higher than minimum wage, but a tip is appreciated. But don't ever, this is just such a pet peeve of mine, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this. If you ever have a tab, you're paying out something and, you know, there's a tip jar at a place, and your bill comes out to $19.88, never ever say, keep the change, the 12 cents. And I'll tell you why. It's better to not tip at all than to give a raggedy little change as a tip. If you do not tip, there's a possibility that you will be given, granted the grace to think, oh, they didn't know that they were supposed to tip here. If you do tip, and you tip mere pennies on something, what it says is, I know I'm supposed to tip, but I am cheap as hell. And I don't think you people are worth jack. If you want good service from people, don't insult them at the beginning of a process. This is the same reason I tell people. And you, when you go out to eat with somebody that causes problems at the table, we all have that friend. who's constantly kind of barking at a waiter or a waitress or a bartender. They're causing problems. They're complaining all the time. Let me just tell you, when that food is is out of your sight, now, this is not normal. Restaurants and restaurateurs, as bad as you treat people, they really won't generally do stuff for your food. But if you are causing problems at a table, I can assure you there's a whole army of people that have seen a million like you, and they are not going to give you good service. You can actually screw it up for the rest of the table. But when it comes to tipping, just one of my pet peeves is when I see people tip like 10 cents because there's this change. They just didn't really want to deal with it. That is just a red. It's like a warning sign. It's like a bell. It's like an alarm that goes off that says, well, this person knows they're supposed to tip, but they put absolutely no effort and they did absolutely nothing to benefit anybody. But they think that they acted like they did something. I'll see this all the time. Just keep that 27 cents. Just take your 27 cents and go on. The temptation from people in the service industry when they get a tiny little tip like that is always to say to the person, no, really, you keep the 27 cents. You obviously need it more than we do. Tipping is it's a bit of an art, but it is something that is certainly appreciated at all service levels. If you get good service, show some level of appreciation. That's just a good thing to do between human beings. Any of you tippers who believe they already get paid for their job, you're the people who need to find a job in food service. You do 6 weeks in food service, I guarantee you, you'll understand the tipping process a hell of a lot better. I'll be right back. Yeah! What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Uh-huh. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And every Friday at this time, we take a look at mostly foreign policy stuff in this segment called False Flag Friday. I'll try to explain to people the historical references that every war is based on lies and manipulated events, many of them either caused to happen directly or allowed to happen, anything to get you into a fear state so that the war machine can keep on churning and sucking up your money. I have said many, many times, conservatives have gone to political rallies as long as I've been politically aware and cheered for huge military budgets. Donald Trump said he rebuilt the American military after Barack Obama had continually ratcheted up military spending, with the war on terror. Donald Trump says it wasn't enough. Our military was incapable of carrying out a mission. Somehow we had let the military just wither on the vine, even though they were getting $600 billion a year. Nobody was held to account for that. Donald Trump stepped in there and took military budgets up a few hundred billion dollars. And conservatives, you cheered. Oh, all this military spending. Where are we now? We've got reports that the military is considering putting soldiers on food stamps because their salaries don't cover the increased cost of living. This is a real story now. See, when you're cheering for these large military budgets, what they tell you you're doing is, air quotes here in the studio, supporting the troops. No, you're supporting the CEO and the board of directors of Raytheon, Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics. That's what you're doing. Conservatives would be wise to stop cheering for those things and actually demand cuts to our military. The people in charge right now, I don't know if you've noticed, but they tend to use our military for no good purposes. And then there's this. For all of you that cheer and you think, well, we got to shovel as much money we can to our armed services, revealed U.S. military bought mass monitoring tool that includes internet browsing and email data. The Augury platform includes highly sensitive network data that Team CYMRU, C-Y-M-R-U, just that alone seems kind of creepy. But anyway, this is a private company. It's selling it to the military. Quote, it's everything. There's nothing else to capture except the smell of electricity, unquote, one cybersecurity expert said. Multiple branches of the U.S. military have bought access to a powerful internet monitoring tool that claims to cover over 90% of the world's internet traffic and which in some cases provides access to people's email data, browsing history, and other information such as their sensitive internet cookies according to contracting data and other documents reviewed by Motherboard. Now, had a whistleblower bring attention to this. They apparently did this kind of in secret. Now, the material reveals the sale and use of a previously little-known monitoring capability that is powered by data purchases from the private sector. The tool, called Augury, is developed by cybersecurity firm Team CYMRU. and bundles a massive amount of data together and makes it available to government and corporate customers as a paid service. In the private industry, cybersecurity analysts use it for following hackers' activity or attributing cyber attacks. In the government world, analysts can do the same, but agencies that deal with criminal investigations also have purchased the capability. The military agencies did not describe their use for the tool. The tool, however, the sale of this still highlights how this team, CMRU, obtains the controversial data and then sells it as a business, something that has alarmed multiple sources in cybersecurity industry. And they go in to say that they collect this stuff from all over the world, so now the U.S. military has got access to things that would typically need a warrant to get. Motherboard has found that U.S. Navy, Army, Cyber Command, and the Defense Counterintelligence and Security Agency, that's CISA, have collectively paid about $3.5 million to access this Augury program. This allows the military to track internet usage using an incredible amount of sensitive information. Motherboard has extensively covered how U.S. agencies gain access to data that in some cases would require a warrant or other legal mechanism by simply purchasing data that is available commercially from private companies. Most often, the sales center around location data harvested from smartphones. So here you go. We've got you've got Big Brother in the military now. Thank goodness we've shoveled money at them. They're in every nook and cranny of your life. But Mike, they're just using it. just like the war on terror that was just about radical brown Muslims, right? And now has morphed into a domestic war on terror. I'm telling you right now, this is not a good development that the U.S. military now has access to all of your data without a warrant. The loving Ukrainian democracy is up to it again. Again, they're having referendums today in Ukraine for several areas that want to be part of Russia. Many of the people do, maybe not everybody. Starting last month, Ukrainian lawmakers began seeking to implement severe consequences for those participating in Russia-sponsored referendums in occupied territories of Ukraine. For example, a law is being pushed through parliament which criminalizes obtaining a Russian passport in temporarily occupied territories. Proposed possible punishments have included losing Ukrainian citizenship or even lengthy jail sentences. But this loving democracy of Ukraine that everybody's flying their flag. You know, what's always the, what's it called, casus belli? Where they tell us that American foreign policy is all about strengthening democracy around the world. But have you noticed that when people we don't like, when results might not be what the U.S. State Department, the U.S. government likes, they call it, what they're calling today's referendums, sham elections. Now, these are people in these areas that identify as ethnic Russians who have been murdered by the Ukrainian government, getting together and voting to be an autonomous area or part of the Russian Federation. For some reason, we don't like that form of democracy. Democracy in the U.S. eyes, and this is Western countries as well, democracy is only valuable when the result is what we want. We don't respect democracy or the will of the people when they get together and make a horrific mistake down in Venezuela and elect Maduro as their socialist leader down in Venezuela. They're paying the price for that now. But when they do that, we don't recognize their sovereignty. We don't let them make a bad mistake. No, we don't like Maduro. So during the Trump administration, we just named another president, Juan Guaido. We just said he's the president now. We didn't even phone in a good bloody coup in that one. We just said, no, this is the guy now. All you Venezuelan people, we don't care what you say. We've picked the president. Juan Guaido's the guy now. Now, this didn't work. They tried this. Really, it was very strange. Can you just imagine? Can you imagine if the Chinese ran the world right now and they just said, you know what, and it's not as good an example now because we all want Joe Biden to not be president. But if you can imagine during Trump's presidency, if the Chinese who ran the world, if they had the world empire that we have, if they just came in and said, nope, Trump's not the president of the United States anymore, Nancy Pelosi is. I mean, I would say, can you at least put in a coup, spend some money, you know, some civil unrest, put in some planning to it? No, the U.S. just named another president of Venezuela. Democracy only is important to the United States and our vassal states when the result is what we intend it to be. Anything else is a, air quotes here in the studio, sham. So Ukraine is now considering locking up people who vote in these elections that are taking place today for up to 5 years. On Friday, Russian-occupied regions in Ukraine kicked off voting in referendums on joining Russian Federation, according to announcements by a series of separatist leaders in the biggest political development on the ground thus far. These popular referendums are taking place in four areas of Ukraine in east and south, namely the self-described republics of Donetsk, Luhansk, and a large parts of Kherson and Zaporizhia. Despite these not yet being under full military control, I would imagine you're going to see some bloodshed today if Ukrainian forces are still in the area as these people go to the polls, or they'll be rounding people up and trying to imprison them. In total, these four regions that are voting on their own fate today make up about 20% of Ukraine's territory. And if this takes place and they decide that they want to be part of the Russian Federation, then Russia is going to defend these people. This is going to actually get worse. Ukraine's Western backers have dismissed the voting as a, quote, sham. Even as there's widespread acknowledgement, the results will likely be overwhelming in the favor of joining Russia, meaning the people in these areas have been at the receiving end of attacks by the Ukrainian government now for 8 years. Starting in 2014, the Ukrainian government and the Nazis involved in the Ukrainian government have been murdering ethnic Russians in these areas. They're kind of tired of that, and they're going to vote for their freedom from this area. But, of course, the U.S., in its love for democracy, will call this a sham and will not recognize the will of these people democratically voting to do something. The hypocrisy is so thick with U.S. foreign policy. I'm going to come back. Tucker Carlson stealing some more of my material. Thanks to Greg for pointing this out to me. I don't have cable anymore. So I kind of have to get a heads up when there's a clip that's interesting. But Tucker Carlson covered something last night that I just am happy to have the reinforcements. I'll do that when we come back. Stick around. My tiny little footprint out here in Flora, Mississippi, covering central Mississippi, my small little piece of the world where I have been trying to point out the hypocrisy and the war machine to a largely conservative audience that was hoodwinked into this stuff. I think they're waking up slowly, piece by piece. They're starting to understand the con of these endless wars, but I like to bring in reinforcements for people that actually have huge audiences, and that's Tucker Carlson. We're going to get to a clip of his in just a second. But, you know, it's really quite amazing. When they have these referendums in Ukraine today, you have to understand what that means. These people want to be a part of Russia. They've been under attack by the Ukrainian government that we installed in 2014, now for 8 years. Their people have been dying. They've been abused. Russian was forbidden to be spoken in Ukraine. This loving democracy that everybody is supporting. They've been jailing people. They've been bombing them. They refuse to teach in Russian, people who are ethnic Russians in their specific areas. So these people are going to vote to be part of Russia. Once that happens, then Russia is actually defending its own territory in their eyes. Now, we will call this in the United States, our government will call these, and the Western powers that want this war with Putin and with Russia, they'll call these sham elections. It's very interesting. Crimea back, I believe it was in 2014, very quickly they saw the handwriting on the wall. They saw the Nazis, the anti-Russian elements being installed by the United States and the EU into the government of Ukraine. And the Crimean people said, oh, dear, this is not going to work out well for us. We want to be part of Russia. And they voted 90% in that area. 90% of the vote. You think about the people who rule over us. They win by like 52%. It's considered a landslide if they get 58%. In Crimea, 90% of the people voted to be a part of Russia. And we've never respected that. Ukraine doesn't respect that. They have said they are going to retake by force these people who do not want to be under Ukrainian rule. So we do not respect democracy in any way, shape, or form in this country. Democracy is only a useful tool when it gives us the outcome that we want. So when Russia, when these people vote to be a part of Russia, this puts a complete red line in the sand and says, these are now Russian people. This is now Russian territory. Any encroachments or any attempts to retake these areas will be met the same way that if the United States, if somebody moved in, if the Canadian Army moved in and started to try to take over Wisconsin. You don't just give up part of your own country. This is very escalatory, but it's also necessary. The people there want out from under the Nazi regime of the Ukraine government, and they're going to get it. There may be a lot of bloodshed around it, but they're going to get it. Tucker Carlson, I've talked a lot about the fact that this whole event could have been stopped in an afternoon either previous to the war by recognizing the autonomy of the areas in eastern Ukraine full of these ethnic Russians who've been under attack by the Ukrainian government. And at any point since, they also could have stopped this war. So all the hand-wringing and pearl-clutching about the brutality of the Russians, this is because Western powers want this war. And Tucker Carlson knows this too.
The longer this war goes on, inevitably, the poorer everyone is going to be, with the exception probably of Vladimir Putin. So we are breaking things that are very hard to rebuild. Again, this was very obvious the first day of the war. You weren't allowed to say it at the time. Anyone who did was denounced as a Russian spy. But it was still clearly true. And the Ukrainians certainly understood it. Back in April, according to an account in Foreign Policy magazine, negotiators from the governments of Russia and Ukraine met secretly and, quote, appeared to have tentatively agreed on the outlines of a negotiated interim settlement to end the war. The terms of the deal were simple. Russia would withdraw its troops from Ukraine. Ukraine would promise not to join NATO. So each side would get the thing that it wants most, simple and effective.
Now, I believe those negotiations also included independence and granted autonomy to these eastern Ukraine. It wasn't going back just to a status quo. The people in eastern Ukraine would be their own areas, independent areas, separate from the Ukrainian government. I believe that was also included in this. I'm not sure why he left it out.
And it might have worked. But the Biden administration adamantly opposed this settlement.
Now, I want to point out, this is one thing I'm going to disagree with on Tucker Carlson about this. He's not wrong. The Biden administration is absolutely pushing us towards this World War III. They are frothing at the mouth for conflict, for a proxy war with Vladimir Putin, because Joe Biden is a blood-soaked warmonger himself and surrounded himself with the same things. But he is emboldened by the Roger Wickers and the Marsha Blackburns and the Marco Rubios and the Ted Cruzes. He's also emboldened by the Mike Pompeos, who for years as our Secretary of State demonized Russia and levied sanctions against them. So let's not think that this is a partisan issue. This is most of the power structure is hell-bent on war with Russia.
Biden's advisors didn't just want the Russians to leave Ukraine. That's what they told us they wanted on television. But no. Biden's advisors wanted a total regime change war against Russia, apparently to avenge the election of Donald Trump, which they believed Putin was responsible for.
Now, again, I'm not really sure. I'm just going to disagree with Tucker here to a degree. They have been going after Russia for 30 years. NATO has been expanding towards their borders long before Donald Trump, long before Joe Biden, and during the Trump administration himself, Donald Trump took very aggressive actions against Russia. He shipped lethal weaponry into Ukraine that they could use either in defense of themselves or aggressively against Russian forces in these breakaway regions. So this, I don't know if this is Biden's motivation, but this is just would be the latest excuse. They have been provoking Russia in 2014. It was 2014 when the Hillary Clinton State Department under Barack Obama overthrew the government of Ukraine. They were trying to start stuff with Russia 8 years ago. And that wasn't brand new. They didn't wake up one morning. So for years, even previous to that, Mitt Romney campaigned on Russia being the biggest threat to the world. If you remember this in 2012, that's Mitt Romney, the Republican, campaigned on saying, no, Russia is the real threat now. So this is bipartisan. I know that Tucker does a show that caters mostly to conservatives. A lot of Trump supporters love Tucker Carlson, but to try to act like the Trump administration did not take aggressive, did not help lead us to this war, I believe is completely, really, honestly disingenuous.
And they were willing to fight to the last Ukrainian to get it. So on April 9th of this year, the White House dispatched its hapless cutout, then British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, to Kiev. According to Ukrainian news media, Johnson communicated two messages to the Zelensky government. Quote, the first is that Putin is a war criminal. He should be pressured, not negotiated with. And the second is that even if Ukraine is ready to sign some agreements on guarantees with Putin, the West is not. In other words, who cares what the Ukrainians want? America and the UK demand total war with Russia, regime change war with Russia. And of course, the Ukrainians caught in the middle had no choice but to concede. So days later, the peace negotiations fell apart. This was virtually unreported at the time, but it was the turning point in the war in Ukraine. This was the moment where the goal changed from restoring Ukraine to what it was before the invasion, and that seems reasonable to everyone in the West, to something very different, to a war designed to topple Vladimir Putin, just like we toppled Saddam Hussein, and then hoping for the best afterward. That is clearly insane and dangerous. But that's where we are. And from that point on, everything changed. And that is how we got to where we are today, which is the closest we have ever been to nuclear conflict in history.
And he's exactly right. Yep, they scuttled peace talks. Kissinger went over to Vietnam and scuttled peace talks before the 1968 election of Richard Nixon. They didn't want LBJ to get a victory of ending the Vietnam War before Nixon got into office. It led to, I believe, 5 more years of fighting and tens of thousands of young Americans dying. They scuttled the peace talks for political reasons. These people want this war. And as it gets worse, and it has the potential to get dramatically worse from here, always remember, and please, please do not think of this in partisan terms. Of course, Joe Biden's a disaster. He is an absolute abject disaster for this country. But he is emboldened by the likes of the Roger Wickers, the Marsha Blackburns, who for some reason has just lost her ever-loving mind around Russia, the Mike Pompeos, the Lindsey Grahams, the Mitt Romneys. These are all people with the same Russia hysteria that the Democrats have. There may be different reasons for it, but I think the main reason is to feed the war machine. They want this war for power and for profit, not for anything else. It sure as hell is not for democracy. I'll be right back. What's a frequency can at the shop in Sedrine? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and this is the time of the week. It's kind of a sprint to the finish line as we chronicle the world's descent into madness with our clips that document this, and this week on the crazy train. But I've got one kind of a segue clip between False Flag Friday and this week on the crazy train. I thought this fit pretty well.
In China, a disastrous sight. A massive fire engulfed a 42-story skyscraper in the city of Changsha Friday. Remarkably, no injuries or deaths are reported.
So a 42-story building in Shanghai, or wherever they said in China, was totally engulfed in flames. I went and found some pictures of this thing and the remnants of it. Strangely enough, it did not collapse into its own footprint. I'm just saying. Yeah, I think you know what I'm saying. All right, Jackson made the news again. This is Jackson is not known well for good positive media coverage, but this was an exception as Jackson, little old Jackson, Mississippi, made the national news again.
For the first time since late July, people in Jackson, Mississippi don't have to boil their tap water before drinking it.
Woo-hoo!
The alert was lifted today, but concerns remain about copper and lead levels in the city's troubled water system. Families are urged to keep using bottled water to make baby formula.
So there you go, Jackson. Holy cow. That's quite the advertisement for moving your family or your business to Jackson, Mississippi, isn't it? For you got a month, no water, and now we're worried about copper and lead. I'll be honest with you. That was the first time I'd heard about that. I think I've been drinking this stuff. Let's see. First thing we're going to get to is just a little bit of COVID stuff here. I wanted to play the beginning of this clip.
Tony Bittner, I came before you guys a year ago. I'm a nurse, or at least I was, at Rady Children's in the cardiovascular intensive care unit until Nathan and his misinformation pandemic caused me to lose my job. I took care of those children who came in with myocarditis after the vaccine. And I talked to the doctors because I was a charge nurse, saying, why aren't we reporting these to VAERS? Who is going to report these to VAERS? It was an unspoken thing that we were not allowed to talk about openly on the unit. I've worked for 13 years in this community, taking care of some of the sickest patients. The day before I was taken away from my position, I was actively giving compressions to a child, pushing Abby, pushing calcium into his veins to keep him alive.
So this is a nurse. She was seeing a lot of kids with myocarditis and heart problems. After taking the vaccine, she said, why aren't we reporting this to VAERS? Those of you who don't know, VAERS is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It's supposed to be kind of compulsory. Anytime you see something that could be an adverse event to any vaccine, you're supposed to report it to the CDC database so they can accumulate statistics and data on anybody that's being harmed by a vaccine. Instead of reporting to VAERS when she asked, she was fired. She was fired from her job. 13 years as being a nurse, she brings up the fact they should report vaccine events to the VAERS system, and it's not talked about at the hospital, so they just fired her. One more time, talking about This Week on the Crazy Train. I played this earlier in the week, but this one, I got to play this one again when it comes to the shots.
Well, tonight's Health Spotlight, emerging new research shows a growing number of transplant recipients are suddenly rejecting their new organ.
Scientists say the COVID vaccine could be to blame. Joining us now to explain is Swish TV's medical reporter, Dr. Mary Gillis. Mary.
Alexis, Phil, according to a new study published in the Journal of Clinical Medicine, acute corneal allografts are being rejected by immunized patients who've undergone the procedure. Researchers say the underlying cause could be tied to a systematic inflammatory response elicited by the shot. The cornea is the outermost layer of your eye. Corneal grafts are used to restore vision, reduce eye pain, and improve the appearance of a damaged cornea. The surgery is known to be one of the most successful transplant procedures with low rejection rates. Japanese researchers compiled data from 23 studies, a total of 23 eyes from 21 patients who had undergone corneal graft procedures were assessed. Graft rejection occurred anywhere from 1 day to 6 weeks after vaccination in all patients, some who underwent the procedure as far back as 20 years ago. In the paper, study authors write, as the virus continues to spread, additional booster COVID-19 vaccines are expected. Therefore, proper follow-up of corneal allograft recipients and interventions to prevent corneal allograft rejection after they received the COVID-19 vaccine may be crucial. Among the list of emerging complications linked to the vaccine are blood clots, heart inflammation, and Guillain-Barré syndrome.
So if you get that in plain English, what they found is, you know, since they didn't study these things in humans, didn't do any long-term safety studies like every other shot. So what they're finding is people who had corneal transplants 20 years ago, been living with them fine, restored their vision, restored, gave them a better quality of life. It doesn't matter when you had this transplant done, these shots within 1 day to 6 weeks, boop, that is some eye-popping news not covered by most of the mainstream media. This was Joe Biden declared the end of the pandemic, but there were some people who really took exception to that.
Well, there's fallout tonight after President Biden's interview with 60 Minutes. Comments he made about the pandemic led stocks of three COVID vaccine makers to plunge, shares falling as much as 9%. CBS's Ed O'Keefe reports from the White House.
President Biden's conclusion on 60 Minutes Sunday that the COVID pandemic has ended prompted pushback from health experts and clarifications from top officials.
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over.
Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra, who held a photo op promoting the latest COVID booster shot, was asked what the president meant.
Make no mistake, people are still dying. And what the president is saying is that we all want to get back to where we were before COVID.
While overall case rates are dropping, nearly 400 people are still dying each day, with about 30,000 currently hospitalized. And Dr. Anthony Fauci today warned vaccination rates are too low to end the pandemic.
It is likely that we will see another variant emerge, and is already on the horizon.
Yeah, there you go. There's more coming. No, Joe, don't tell him it's over. It's affecting sales, pharmaceutical companies, stocks dipping. So they had to jump into action to let you know it's still going on. Nancy Pelosi went out and did her thing. That part of this Inflation Reduction Act was putting more cost for pharmaceuticals onto the taxpayer and away from seniors.
We've been trying for decades to enable the secretary to negotiate for lower drug prices. This is a kitchen table issue. It is something that is of value to us, and we finally were successful in this legislation. We want to do more, but we have kicked open that door. And when we did, to get lower drug prices, negotiate for lower prices, and have the $2,000 cap so important to our seniors, guess what?
Yeah.
We can applaud that.
There you go. That's a $2,000 cap for seniors on their drugs. Everything over and above that will be taken care of by the U.S. taxpayer. That's why I continue to tell you that student debt relief is just it's just one more program where you are paying for things that do not belong, you know, they're not your responsibility. We pretend like that's not existing elsewhere. But anyway, Joe Biden, just a couple of his mealy-mouth clips here.
For too long, we paid a higher price for prescription drugs than any nation in the world.
Wait, what?
For too long, we paid a higher price for prescription drugs than any nation in the world.
Restriction of drugs? I'm not really sure exactly what he's saying.
Their costs are, no matter what, no matter whether they have drug for... their costs are, no matter what, no matter whether they have drug for...
Good grief. He also touted the jobs reports.
The biggest job drop in unemployment.
It's the biggest ever. That's something different. I ran across this clip. I thought this was pretty funny. This is, and I want to, I'll tell you, I guess a little bit of a spoiler. This is Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom on homelessness in San Francisco. I don't know if you've seen pictures of what's going on in San Francisco and Seattle and Portland with the homeless populations, Los Angeles. It's really, really, really bad. Here is Gavin Newsom 14 years ago. That number, 14, is important. 14 years ago, here's Gavin Newsom, who is he's jockeying himself to be our next president.
We believe fundamentally that food solves hunger, that shelters solve sleep, and that housing solves homelessness. And if we're going to solve the problem of those that are out on the streets that we define as homeless, we better solve the housing problem if we're going to have an impact. And that's why we established this framework, what we call a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness in San Francisco.
There you go. 14 years ago, Gavin Newsom came out with a 10-year plan to solve homelessness. 14 years later, it's worse than it's ever been. That's pretty typical government. This was kind of gross, but they're trying to keep kind of the war on terror. Everybody stay alarmed. Everybody stay fearful. Keep a watchful eye out and tell on your neighbors at any time you can.
If you see something, say something is more than a slogan. It's how we protect ourselves, our loved ones, and our communities. You play a key role by recognizing and reporting suspicious activity.
This is our Homeland Security Director, Mayorkas, I believe is his name.
It's about all of us. Why do I see, say, to protect my wife and our daughters, to make my community safer, and to empower others to do their part? Why do you see, say? September 25th is See, Say Day. Post on social media using hashtag YICSay and hashtag CSayDay to share your reason for reporting suspicious activity.
God. It was National CSayDay, or it will be on the 25th. So if you see anything, turn in that neighbor. Oh, boy. They are in every nook and cranny of our lives, and it's about to get a little bit worse. Check this one out.
A new proposal to fight drunk driving. The NTSB is calling for all new vehicles to be equipped with blood alcohol monitoring systems that could act as a breathalyzer. If a driver is deemed under the influence, for example, the vehicle wouldn't move. Other government agencies would need to act on that recommendation, though.
Yeah, there you go. Every new car manufactured, they're trying to put a breathalyzer in there. You are a drunk behind the wheel until you prove otherwise. I'll be right back.
This is Captain America calling. I bailed you out when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the day. Heading into a weekend, I always want to advise people, if you're looking for a great place to go out, take the family, take a date, go out with the guys to catch a football game, the best place to go is Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. That is, they are at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there by Germantown High School. They're 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, everything made the way you want it right in front of you, so there's no more tyranny of the children picking out all the toppings on the pizza. You can get them their own and get your own as well. It's great quality food. This is a veteran-owned business, a locally-owned business that's been serving the Gluckstadt community. And I run into people all the time that drive over from Clinton, they drive from Brandon, or some people say, anytime I'm in the neighborhood, I make sure I check out Your Pie. If you want to go, make sure that you download the app. Right now, they have got a deal going where if you download the app, and that is the Your Pie app, you can find it in the App Store. Download the app, go in, you make a purchase, you'll get a barcode at the bottom of your receipt, you scan that barcode, and I think within a day, 24 hours or something, you will be emailed or come on the app a free pizza. So you'll actually get a free pizza just for downloading the app and making a purchase there. So make sure that you do that. They are also available with Take a Break Deliveries. Does deliver Your Pie. So if you can't get out and you want it brought to you, then use Take a Break Deliveries and Your Pie. Express your inner pizza. This is a great place to go. I never have anybody tell me that I steered them wrong sending them to Your Pie. All right. Finales are always big things. I remember my mom was a huge MASH fan. If you remember Alan Alda and MASH. The big MASH finale was just huge. At one time, it may still be one of the most watched programs of all time. I remember when Seinfeld went off. There's always just, whenever anybody announces a final episode of something popular, it's always a ratings blockbuster. Well, we've got a finale coming up that I think will be the least watched in the history of mankind.
The January 6th committee has scheduled what's expected to be its final public hearing for next Wednesday. The chairman says it will feature new video and witness testimony that we haven't seen yet.
And nobody will care and nobody will watch it. They've done polls that show that it doesn't matter what's happening right now. Nobody's changing their mind on anything, but they keep at it. You've got to admire their tenacity. This is, we get into some social justice warrior stuff, some green stuff. I thought this was kind of interesting as they herald us into the all-electric future that's just not quite ready for prime time.
Story tonight, a fire at a PG&E Tesla-powered energy storage facility in Moss Landing. We are getting our first look at what the fire looked like when it broke out last night. Fire led to a shelter-in-place order and forced the closure of Highway 1 through Moss Landing. That order still in effect tonight.
So there you go. More of these fires. I mean, I can't stop reporting on these things because they're happening basically just about every day. These are the some of the teachers. We feature some of the teachers that are in charge of teaching our youth out there, and they are just this parental involvement that's propped up. They are not happy with this at all.
Teachers need to be allowed to teach. I'm a parent, and I'm sorry to all you parents out there, but you do not get a say in your child's teacher's lesson plans. I spent thousands of dollars on a degree and my educator's license, and I would be gosh darned if parents tried to tell me how to write my lesson plans that I literally went to school to learn how to write. You know, if a parent wants to have that much say in their kid's education, then you know what? You probably need to homeschool them.
Yes, homeschool them. Get your child out of my class. Don't you dare meddle with it. Now, I got to tell you, I don't know, parents need to be in lesson plans, but they do need to be guiding what lessons are being taught. Here's a fun thing. I don't know what you have planned for yourself on your demise. I have told my kids, here's my plan if I die. I'm going to get on the record here. My kids know this well. I want to be cremated, put into an urn, and I want some of those little kind of holographic googly eyes put on it, the kind of little eyes that follow you around a room. And I've told my kids that every Christmas they need one of them. They're 21 now, so they live apart. They get to hand off my ashes each year, but I need to be put somewhere prominent in the house, like on a fireplace mantle. And I want their friends to walk into the house and see this urn with the googly eyes watching them all across the room. So they go, "What in the hell is that?" Say, "That's my dad." Anyway, if you don't choose my particular path, this is another option that we will have now.
Californians have a new and greener way to return their dead loved ones to the earth. This week, Governor Newsom signed a bill legalizing human composting. It's a process that allows a body to naturally break down in soil. For more on this, we're joined by the author of that bill, Southern California Assembly Member Christina Garcia. Appreciate you taking the time. So let's start with how the process of human composting works and what makes this more environmentally friendly than a traditional burial or cremation?
Okay, definitely. Thank you for having me here. Sure. The process currently takes the body and puts it into a vessel. In the vessel, you have some wood chips, some mulch, some dirt, and it decomposes. That's airtight, and so the process is quicker than if you were just be put into the ground. It takes about 30 to 45 days, and at the end, we have rich soil nutrients that could be used to plant a garden, to plant trees, or can be donated to conservation out there. And so this is a more natural way. It's a more organic way. If you do a traditional casket burial, there's chemicals that are used there.
Well, so there you go. You can be composted if you like to. I just hope that if that happens to me, I do want to end up on an organic farm, please. I've done a lot to avoid those chemicals. Put me on an organic farm. And then there's this last one, just shows you how insane we've all gone.
Well, the FDA issuing a warning against what it is calling a dangerous TikTok challenge. The challenge involves cooking chicken in NyQuil or other similar over-the-counter cough and cold medicine. Why? Okay.
Who knows?
The FDA says that boiling these medications can make the solution much more concentrated, and inhaling the vapors could allow high amounts of the drug to enter the body and injure the lungs. The FDA releasing the warning after reports of teens being rushed to the emergency room after taking part in this challenge, again, one that I clearly don't understand. TikTok and Procter & Gamble, the maker of NyQuil, by the way, have not yet commented about this warning.
Obviously dangerous. Also probably tastes terrible.
Right.
Why?
I just don't understand the point.
I don't either.
All right.
Okay. Sounds disgusting. Gotta love TikTok and social media. Such a great influence on our children. That's all the time I've got today. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. I'll see everybody on Monday. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.